You recognize the building code and products for companies is something that you like to do. You started with a service business, but that was kind of...
Because I needed money.
Cash rotational in a way.
So I was getting revenue from selling services. But what I wanted to do is build a software.
Did you overhire or was it still kind of investment in the product?
At the time, I was super stressed. Now, I feel like I did the best I can do. Because when you raise money, you want to go fast. First time of my life where I had to fire people that I liked.
That's the risk of open source, right? Because people learn it on their own.
It's one of the risks of open source. Another one is that it's a winner takes all market. If you are not the number one, you are nothing.
So tell me, Fabian, about, you start coding very young.
Very young, yeah.
You run a $1 billion revenue business today, yes?
Right? Yeah, multi-billion, yeah.
Multi-billion dollar business, and you base it out of India. But you started coding very young. Tell me a little bit about...
I'm a developer, that's what I like. Even though today I'm CEO, founder, whatever you want, I'm still a developer in my mind. Because I like intellectual and challenging stuff, and development is interesting. Mm-hmm. You can always learn. I started very young to develop a lot of things.
Tell me about a childhood. Like, how did you get into this?
Just had like an old computer, Atari, with a manual. So I learned on the manual, and then it was a time that there was no internet, so you had to learn everything on your own. And just learn like that. I developed games, and after games, website, and after website, virus, and after virus, antivirus. it grew like that. And I've also always been passionate about businesses and entrepreneurship and companies. So I was reading a lot of books on the topic. And
how old were you? Tell me about your home, family.
My family is the opposite of me.
Okay.
So my dad runs an auction house. So it's everything about antiques.
Oh, really?
Old stuff. And I'm more in the modern way. But still, he was an entrepreneur. So I learned something very important and valuable from him is to work hard. He was working super hard. Even today, he's still working super hard.
Okay.
And that's probably the best thing I learned from him.
Wow. And where did you grow up?
In Belgium. So it's a small country, Belgium. In the French part of Belgium.
Okay.
So we speak French. It's like, Belgium is 11 million of people.
Correct.
So it's super, super small. So when you are in Belgium, you basically, the business, you quickly have to expand and go to different countries. So you start in France and the Netherlands and then grow up like this.
Okay. And where did you study?
I studied in a small city called Louvain-la-Neuve,
okay.
Polytechnic Engineering,
uh-huh.
With a specialty in computer science. But I didn't go to courses.
Okay.
I was more doing fun, party, and organizing stuff. And I run my business also on the side at the time already. So
was it Odoo or was it something?
It was the different product. It was not Odoo, but it was the same company. So I had lots of different activities. At the beginning, I did management software for auction houses. And then e-commerce.
Started from home.
Started from the friends of my father.
Okay.
And then I did some e-commerce and then developments on demand for customers. And at some point, I said, okay, I stop everything and I focus on one thing that I like, business software.
Okay. And how old were you when you did that?
Today, I'm 44. At the time, you mean?
When you started this?
I sold my first development at 13 years old for a taxi brand. And
you're 13 years old.
Yes, so it was a friend of my father.
Okay,
but I developed everything, accounting, invoicing, and for him. So I started early, which is good because you have nothing to lose. No kids, no wife, no. So you just have your time, and you can spend time developing the business without any risk.
While you were at school on the side, this was like a hobby.
Yeah, it was. I was spending more time developing, working for clients rather than going to courses. And I had my first employee while I was still a student.
Uh-huh.
So it was funny because at the time of the exam, I still had to work
and
learn everything. So I was in a small student room. I was learning my exam, and next to me, there were two or three employees doing the job for the clients.
Wow. But tell me about how did this go from a hobby and a side gig to becoming a full-time thing? At what point did you take that plunge?
So after I get graduated, I went full time. I had a lot of different activities. I even had a fashion brand where I was selling t-shirts and things like that. But I wanted to do something to fix a very complex problem. I wanted something like you take years or decades to do. And so at some point, it's okay, I stop all these activities and I refocus on one thing, which is business software, make company more efficient, which is a very complex challenge. And so I stopped all these activities and I refocused on this building, accounting software, website, inventory management software, manufacturing, everything.
And did you build it out as open source, or was that something that evolved?
Yeah, that is very important. I am passionate about open source. I only use open source software. It was my passion before being my business model. So I started Odoo as an open source product just because I used open source only, and that's what I do. And but it took me 15 years to understand the business model based on open source, you know, because open source is complex. It's free. It's guaranteed that it's free to use. It's free to modify. It's free to distribute. So it's very difficult to build a business model on top of it.
Correct. So how did you think about that?
At the beginning, I started as a service company. Went fine. I was developing.
So when you say service company, like, break this down for me, like, as if I don't understand this at all.
So I had this software that I built. And then I came to client, what do you want? You want this feature, this feature, this feature? And I was selling the time to develop these features.
Yeah.
It was good, but as you do that for a few years, after a few years, your product has tons of features. It's very complex. You do a lot of things, but because you developed everything people ask for. But it's not a clean product that you can sell to the mass. And in addition to that, a service company business has low margins. You basically sell your time.
Okay.
I wanted to do a software vendor business model where you sell the software and not your time.
Correct.
But that requires way more margin to invest in marketing, research and development. So I had kind of an issue. I was always very tight on cash. For a few years, I had zero at the end of pretty much every month. It was very difficult. It took me years to understand the right way to do it.
And how did you understand? Like, how big was your team when you were in this process of building a service business, which was, you know, kind of rotational cash in a way, right? So you were basically charging for the cost of your and your team.
So I was charging for services and building the software during the night when I had time to build a feature that customer didn't purchase, but I wanted to do. So it was not sustainable. I did it for a few years. And in 2010, I said, okay, I have to switch my business model. I have to be a software vendor and sell recurring revenue.
Wow.
That would be maintenance service, a maintenance contract that they will pay every year, and so that I can focus on building the software and the brand.
Correct.
And I would give the service to other companies that we call partners, and they will deliver the service. I will focus on selling maintenance contract. It was super risky because from one, I had 100 employees at the time. And from one day to another, I say, okay, no, I stop service. I focus on building the product and I will sell my items.
You took that decision instantly, is it?
Yes. But to do that, because it was a risky decision and I had no more revenue, I raised 3 million of euros.
So 2 million euros?
3 million of euros.
Okay.
So I went all around Europe to try to find investors, get to 3 million of euros.
Mm-hmm.
There you feel super rich. You're like, wow, I'm super rich, 2 million of euros. I had a bank account at €0 at the end of every month. And then you start recruiting like crazy, developers and developers, and I will be able to do everything I want to. Refocus the business model, stop service, sell maintenance contract. So maintenance, because we were open source, maintenance was just upgrade and support, if you have questions, and that kind of things. And then I recruited like crazy. And 1.5 years later, I had no more money. I burned everything. And then it started to be difficult. Anyway, we still grew.
Did you overhire, or was it still kind of investment in the product?
Which at the time, I was super stressed. No, I feel like I did the best I can do. Because when you raise money, you want to go fast.
Yeah.
You don't want your cash to be on your bank account and stay there forever. You want to use it, the capital, so that you grow. Yeah. And that's what I did. I used it.
And where were you based at that time?
In Belgium. You want to go fast, but you shouldn't go too fast to not burn too much, because you cannot go below zero.
Yeah.
And at the time, I just did Ridewell. So I burned very quickly and then stabilized. But forced me to take very difficult decisions. First time of my life where I had to fire people that I liked. It was very hard. I remember a night we had to do the listing because we had to cut costs by 30%. I had to do the listing of the people I will fire the next day. It was super hard. So it was not as clean as it should have been. We went a bit too fast, but we really grew fast and it worked. And the switch to the business model more or less worked. So we had maybe 20% of revenues as service and the rest were maintenance contracts. And so we could grow on that because now we had recurring revenues with higher margins. And so we could invest in research and development and in the marketing.
What year was this, Fabian?
What?
Which year?
That was in 2010.
2010.
So I had 31 years old.
Wow.
So I sold my tenants contract, and then open source kicked in. Open source, every people were purchasing these maintenance contracts for the first year. And then second year, they said, it works. Why should I pay for maintenance? The software is free. I can download it. I can use it.
Yeah.
At the beginning, I needed your help. Now that it works, I don't want to pay maintenance.
Okay.
So I was losing all my customer on year two or year three. And that became very complex.
That's the risk of open source, right? Because people learn on their own.
It's one of the risks of open source. Another one is that it's a winner takes all market. If you are not the number one, you are nothing. It's a very hard market. I can explain just after.
Yeah.
And so I get all these clients moving. And so I had to do another switch in the business model, which is to go open core and say, okay, 80% is open source, but I will develop a few features that people will have to pay to get them. So that I can build a real recurring business where people stay as a customer, not as a user of the product. So we are talking about open source. You said why it's difficult is that open source for me is like in economy, we would say a transparent market. You know, where you can test every software and you use the one you prefer, the one which is the best. So it's completely transparent. You can really judge because you download the software, you play with it, you see the source and you use the best one. And because of that, you cannot have policy of differentiation. You cannot create differentiation based on Salesforce, on slides, marketing. No, people just download and test your software. And so there is like a concentration effect on the best one.
Correct.
So they test everything, they go on the best product. And the best product gets a bigger community, bigger mass. And because he has a bigger mass, he evolves faster.
Correct.
So it's a winner takes all. If you are number two, you are nothing in open source. You have to be the number one, which is very hard. because there is in each market there is only one place to take. I didn't understand that at the beginning, fortunately, because I started as the latest one and took me years. But then I built the best product. I really, if I have to summary what we succeeded is to do a great product, much much better than everything else. And at the end, the best products always win. And because I focused on that, at some point I became the best.
And when you say you were the best product, was it at affordability? Was it that the product always worked? Was it there's very rich features? How do you define the best product in like an ERP or in the kind of
this? What we do is we help people do more in less time. We help employees in companies be more efficient. Whatever the employee, you could be a worker in the warehouse, a cashier at the front, an accountant, we record invoice, a recruiter, we recruit. We make every job position way more productive. And that's how our major success is that you have an impact in the companies. And we had that. There was management software for managing your process, you know, from quotation, sale order, invoice delivery. Software did that. Yeah. But people suffered from that. These software were complex. People had to record a lot of data in the system. Nobody liked them. Okay. And so a lot of
people, they make like the teams more less productive.
In a way, more because you had less paper and less communication, but they were also losing a lot of time recording data using a software they didn't like and so on. We did differently. We said management software is not for manager. Management software is for the people, for every users of the company. And if you make all your employees become more productive, then the company will be better. Yeah. And so instead of focusing on management software, like they were always beautiful dashboards for the CEO and that kind of thing, we said, okay, we'll focus on making every user way more productive. And that paid off, but it took time. And the other were focusing on accounting, on workflows. Obviously, we had to do that. It's the minimum of a management software. But making productivity software was new.
Okay.
And that includes also making it affordable to SMEs, because this complete software where you have your website, your accounting, your inventory, were not accessible to SMEs when you started.
Uh-huh.
Costed millions. And we what changed is that we made it affordable. Like in India, it's 580 rupees per user and per month, which is basically nothing for all your company.
Wow. And how long did that transition take to like kind of focus on productivity?
But product is a never, it's a long-term game. It took us 20 years to get to the level we are. And it's not finished. I still consider that we have a lot to.
Amazing. And what part about the? So let me get this straight. You're someone whose father was in
selling old stuff,
auction,
auction house.
And auction house. you started building software for his friends in different places. You recognize that building, you recognize that building code and products for companies is something that you like to do. You started with a service business, but that was kind of
because I needed money,
cash
flow. So I was getting revenue from selling services. But what I wanted to do is build the software.
Yeah, and then you raised a couple of million euros.
Yes,
but burned through it quickly, and then kind of reached a place where building a product on productivity of employees is where you found your core. How long ago was that?
The last switch, the key switch to the business model where we succeeded to be cash profitable, we said, was 7 years ago.
2017.
Yes.
Wow.
It took time. For 15 years, I came back home and said to my wife, it's not good enough. We don't grow enough. Something's wrong. The business model is not good enough. It took me like more than 10 years to understand what to do. And also because I was passionate about open source. So moving to a 100% open source product to something where it's only 80%, but 20% is for free, was against my philosophy. So in a way, I think I was hiding the solution to me. And I missed the obvious, which is because now I sell this 20% of extra feature, I could afford to recruit way more developers, hundreds of developers. So I contribute much more to open source than what I did before.
Correct. Because big picture thinking was more.
Yes. So I was more like, I was focusing on having 100% open source rather than saying, should I recruit way more developers? And only if 80% of them do open source, it's better contribution to the world.
And in 7 years, how has that journey been now?
It's crazy. It's still today, we have 4,000 employees, more than $500 million revenue, and we continue to grow at more than 50% growth per year. So just
4,000 employees?
Yes.
More than $500 million in revenue?
Yes. And we grow
50% every year?
Yes. So just this year, we recruit 2,000 people. And the next year, more than 3,000 people.
Explain your market share across the product suites that you have.
Our market share is easy, 0.1%. Nothing. Because you address all small and mid-sized companies. And most small and mid-sized companies, they have nothing. It's a large market in every country. We are in pretty much every country in the world. And they have nothing. They use Spreadsheet, they have a website on Shopify, they have Tally for accounting, they have MailChimp to send email, but nothing well integrated.
Including us, by the way. Including us, like, okay. And then how do you kind of get, like, let's say a Bombay Shaving Company, how do you get, like, we use Tally for accounting and, you know, our ERP is different, our inventory management is different, our email suites are different. All the products we use, our telephony software are completely different, right? So how do you kind of get Bombay Shaving Company on board? Is it a sales team that comes, kind of does? Yes.
So we only work in inbound. So we will never contact you. We only address the ones who contact us.
Okay.
Because we have so much demand that we don't need to find customers who come to us. If you contact us, you will get a business analyst who will say, okay, explain me how you work. You have this, 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 and then I will show you your future life with Odoo. If you ever do, I will make a demo of all your business process and show you how it works better.
Okay.
So it's very product oriented. We show the product with a demo, but based on your use case.
Okay.
So we have a team of 900 people who do that.
It is all process.
They analyze your process. It's free. Huh? We do that for free in just 2-3 days. They analyze your process and they show you how we can run that process much better with Odoo.
Wow. Interesting. You moved your... So I'm assuming your clients are global in nature, right?
Yes.
But you base your company out of Gandhinagar?
The headquarters is still in Belgium.
Okay.
But I relocated my family 1 year ago to Gandhinagar.
And
why?
Yeah, like you're 43 years old. You're how old are you? You have children?
Yes, 10, 11, 12.
10, 11, and 12. So 3 children.
10 and 12.
10 and 12.
102 of it.
Okay. Good enough. And they've also moved with you?
Yeah, of course.
And they live in Gandhinagar?
Yes. And it's great.
And they enjoy it?
Yes. Because, you know, people have a misconception of the thing. You feel like if you are in a rich country, bigger car, you have a better life. It's not like that. What makes people happy is experience. What you live, how you interact with others, what you learn, what you discover. And I mean, moving to India is an experience. It's a great experience. It's completely different from what you used to it.
Mm.
We went 3 years also in the United States before.
Okay.
And I way prefer India.
Where were you in the US?
In San Francisco.
SF, okay. And
No, it's your podcast, you go.
No, go ahead. It's your podcast. Don't go ahead.
No, well, I'm saying I liked San Francisco, but it was kind of the same than in Europe. So there was not a big experience for us, nothing to learn, a new culture. When you come to India, we are so much better. All the color, different way of thinking of the people, education, which is good, actually, a very good school, better than in Belgium. It's so much things that are different that it's great experience.
Amazing. And but out of your employees, how many are now in Gandhinagar out of
6? So 1 year ago when I arrived, 200. Today, 700. So we recruited 500 in a year.
In India?
In India.
And the other 3,300 are still...
Belgium, Buffalo, San Francisco, but we have offices all around the world. Mexico, Singapore, Hong Kong, and that's one.
And where is the core? Like, how if you were to take these 4,000 people, what are the... what's the development team? What's the sales team?
So basically, the company there is three big departments.
Okay.
Research and development, okay. Mostly developers. It's 1/3 of the company.
Where are they?
Belgium and India only.
Okay, so India and Belgium is the development
the main department.
Okay.
And then we have 1/3 of our people service. It's the guys who do business analysis, they analyze your business and do demos and then configure and everything and train. And 1/3 is salespeople.
And this is the product development, and these two are the
product development, service, and sales.
Sales.
This, we obviously have HR, marketing, accounting, but it's super small compared to these three departments.
And these, where are these sales and the service, or are they more?
So
local?
In every other country, we run the sales and service.
Okay.
But not R&D.
And in India, do you have a sales?
And we also have sales and service, and that's what I grew the most in India over the past year.
Tell me about, like, this is fascinating because. We sell razors only in India. We sell all our products only in India. So our understanding of consumer, and you run a more of B2B business, of course, so it's very different. But our understanding of consumer is very local. But you have a buyer who may be buying your stuff out of Mumbai or out of London, out of New York, out of Sydney, out of wherever. But tell me about what
is one of my biggest disadvantage is also my advantage.
Okay.
So we are Belgium. And in Belgium, it's French people. It's only 4 or 5 million of people. The French speaking part of Belgium. So it's nothing. So if we want to grow a company, we are forced to externalize. Exactly. And we think that way. There is no market in Belgium. Mm-hmm. So we are good at multi-language, multi-culture. It's the European way. One of our biggest disadvantage is to be Belgian.
Correct.
There is no market, only 5 million of people in the French speaking part. But it's also our best advantage. Because of that, we think multi-country.
Okay.
We think multiple languages. We have to export very quickly in the development of the company. And so for us, I believe it's easier to internationalize yourself as opposed to an American who can just stay on this market, which is super big.
Got it.
And it's the same in India. It's a huge market. You don't need to export that much at the beginning, at least.
Correct.
So we have this mindset in Belgium of exporting because we have no other alternative if you want to really grow a business. So it's kind of the same thing we are good at. The software was multi-language on day one.
Okay.
Nobody would do that. On day one, it was already multi-language. And then we developed accounting in 200 countries, which is very complex.
That must have been very difficult, right? Because
compliance is different from one country to another. So, but because we are good at multiple language, understanding other cultures and so on, we developed 20 countries.
Okay.
And everything like that. Maybe we should come back to why we went to India because I don't think I answered
that
question.
That's really interesting. So, I'm just trying to understand this. Right? So you raised capital, you expanded the business, you got into a space that you understood, you made it, you're philosophically open about open source. When you found your fit, that's when the business started scaling. Mm-hmm. And then you moved to India, right? I think that was the unlock that you did. Talk about that a little bit.
Yes. So in India, we had a lot of activities, a lot of partners. So companies were selling services on Odoo, but none of them were working on the domestic market.
Okay.
All of them were development companies who were selling services to Americans, Europeans on Odoo software, but not the domestic market.
Okay.
So as a result, our sales in India were very low. But it's a huge market. I mean, SMEs are growing like crazy. Okay. Middle class is exploding. 1/5 of the world population. So everything is there in India. And they all speak English. Super easy. at least the business
people. Okay.
And so we were missing this market because all our partners were focusing on selling at higher price in different countries. So I came in India for that, to solve this challenge and say, okay, there is a massive market here. We have a service offer. We have competencies. There was something like 30,000 full-time employees on Odoo, but they were just doing service for other countries. Let's retarget to serve the domestic market.
Okay.
And that's what I did. I came here to move the company from one step higher. And so we started to accelerate massively a year ago on the domestic market.
Wow. And who are your, like, who are your first few clients in India? Like, how has that experience been in kind of taking your product to an Indian SME, to an Indian client, selling it,
yeah,
and then working with them?
So India is complex because it's super price sensitive.
Correct.
And Odoo, our strength is to be the best of the market. But Indians, they are not like Americans.
Correct.
Americans, they choose the best product. They say, I want for my business, I'm going to pay the best. They just pick the best. Yeah. Indians, no. I want the cheapest.
Yeah.
And so in a way, it was difficult for us because we had the best. But fortunately, because of our open source business model, of way of working with the mass, our costs are super low. So we could adapt to the Indian market and offer a price that fits the Indian market. So we could come at the price is 580 rupees per user for all the applications. And basically, they don't need anything else. Everything's fully integrated and great usability, which is good for the Indian market, I believe. So fortunately, the product was good enough to adapt to this market.
Also talent, right? I think if you are able to get into the Indian market at a client service standpoint, either for product or sales or service, I think you get access to really good talent in India that can service your global ambition.
But that's what we were doing since 15 years.
Okay.
But it's clear that in order to drive your cost low, because it's one of the way I see Odoo is we succeeded in two things. Great value for the users, so the best software, at affordable, at a low price.
Okay.
That's really the two things I focus on. So over the years, I only decreased and decreased and decreased the price. And in a way, India helped a lot. Because, for instance, when you buy your subscription at Odoo at 580 rupees, it includes unlimited support. But some customers, they can call you 10 times a month because they need help to close their tax period and that kind of things. So having a support team in India that we could scale helped a lot.
Correct.
To serve the world.
So you, out of these 700 employees in India, how do you divide them across R&D?
It's the same as in Belgium, one third. One third R&D, one third service, one third sales.
Amazing. All in Gandhinagar.
All in Gandhinagar.
And why Gandhinagar?
You know, I've opened a lot of countries, like maybe 15 countries or so. Location is not important for us. We are internet-based. We can address our customer for pretty much everywhere. What matters is the person who created the company. The success of a company is the founder more than the location.
Correct.
And so the way I work is that when I want to open a new country, I search for the right person first. And the person usually decides where we open. And in that case, it was Mantavya Gadjar, our director in India. Mantavya Gadjar.
Okay.
I worked with him 15 years ago. He was still a student. I was at the beginning of Odoo. I noticed this guy was very good. And said, okay, I want to do something with him. And we said, okay, let's create a company. You manage it. He was living in Gandhinagar, so he started in his home.
Before work from home was a thing, right?
Yes. Yeah. And so we are in Gandhinagar because he lived in Gandhinagar.
Was it a conversation that was easy with your family? Like,
yeah, my wife is very aligned with me. The kids have no choice. But my wife is aligned. She wants experience and learn, and it's more important than being comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an easy decision.
For Gandhinagar.
Yeah, perfect. And you know, even now, when I open a new country, I never choose a T1 city because Gandhinagar was probably the best decision I've taken in terms of opening an office. Because for us, what matters is not the business. We need cities where obviously there is lots of universities, smart people, and so on. But more important than everything else is retention of the employees. If you want to build a business for the long term, being able to keep your people on average 7 years or 6 years instead of three is a game changer.
Correct.
And when you are in Gandhinagar, rather than Bangalore, Delhi, or Mumbai, it's much easier because salaries are a bit lower, so you can pay more than the average because people there are more loyal and that kind of thing. So you can offer a better environment. You are not next to TCS or Google or Microsoft.
Yeah.
So and that's actually very, very good. And now when we open a new country, we always do that. Like we have an office in Buffalo. Nobody goes to Buffalo, but super great city. We never go to T1 cities.
Buffalo to New York?
New York, in state of New York.
Wow. Contrast the experience of opening an office in India, the talent in India for you. Like you come from Belgium. I think, I'm not sure I know anyone from Belgium who's come and set up an office in India and hired 1,000 people. Like I don't know that, right? So given that you've done this in 15 countries, contrast India and the talent here, the culture here, the life here to, let's say, China, Belgium, the US, Mexico.
So all of them are very different. India is the world of possibilities.
Okay.
It's basically you can do everything. It's not perfect. It's not going to be always perfect or on time, but you can do everything. The American is a world of perfection. No. You have to build something perfect, and if you do, it has to be the nicest user interface. India is very price sensitive. Mm-hmm. Price really matters a lot, way more than other countries.
Mm.
What else? I really love to work in India, especially in Gujarat. They all have an entrepreneur mindset, which is great. It's your core business model to support entrepreneurs, so working with them is great.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. Even when you look at our distributors, our shopkeepers, whether it's a small business person, a large business person, there are two, three things I love about them. Number one is they are they're people of their word.
Yeah.
They don't, they always, they live up to their promise. They deliver. They will tell you bad news if there is bad news. But they're honest. They don't cheat. They're not people like, people from Gujarat are actually they're reputed to be very stand-up people. Second, they have very strong family values when it comes to business.
Yeah.
Like the families get together, they talk about, what happened in the business today.
They all think entrepreneurship.
They're very entrepreneurial from a young age.
That's something that surprised me. When you go to a library in Europe, all the books are fiction books. You will only have that. And then I went to a library in Gandhinagar, and it was 50% of the book were about entrepreneur, lifestyle, things that you don't find in libraries in Europe.
Wow.
It shows really people are reading, learning, wants to develop their business. It's a good mindset.
Amazing. And it's also like, I think in India as a country, because reputation-wise globally, there is a lot of, even in the previous podcast, there's a lot of acceptance in terms of people coming back, or of course, incomes going up. The kind of talent is becoming a lot better. We've always been an English-speaking country in the sense that English was always a second or third language for anyone in India. Mm. But now I think our social awareness has also increased significantly because of the internet and so on. So it becomes a lot easier. Like the cultural divide between your family and let's say your team at Odoo in Gandhinagar will not be as high as it would have been maybe 25 years ago.
Yeah.
But which are the other countries where you've found it to be an interesting experience to set up an office and build out business?
So I only went to three where I really invested a lot, like more than a year. So my experience is only Belgium, US and India.
Belgium.
The others, we have directors and so I can go, but I don't have as much experience living with the culture than what.
What's been the hard part about doing this?
About
setting up a kind of, setting up a business in India. What's been the hard part about it?
Actually, it's easy.
Yeah.
Seriously, and you can feel it. We work a lot with partners, companies who resell Odoo. I'm surprised in India how fast these people grow. You have the average partner we have in Belgium or in France, good ones, after 3 years, they have 5, maybe 10 employees. 5 years, maybe 15 employees. Here we have partners in India, after 5 years, they have 200 employees.
Are you serious?
Yes, a lot. I feel like most companies are growing faster here than what we used to see
in
Europe.
And that's because the market is, you're able to capture the market.
Yeah,
because
you have 7 to 8% growth of GDP per year, which is already huge. But they have the capabilities of selling to higher countries like United States and Europe. So they have very high margin, especially in service companies where they sell developments. And you have you have a real pool of resources, smart people, basically kind of unlimited pool of developers if you want.
Yeah.
In Belgium, we have three universities in the French part of Belgium. The biggest one, the largest ones of the three, is producing 80 developers per year. 80 developers get graduated per year from the biggest university. Can you, so for a company like us, who just in Belgium, we need to recruit 200 minimum developers per year. You
don't have it.
Here? It feels like it's by the thousands.
Hundreds of thousands, yeah. And do you find good talent? Like instantly in India, you find people who are able to quickly ramp up?
So there is a mix. Maybe I can compare education with my kids. If you look at education and talents in Europe, everyone will be good. So everyone will be from good to very good, but everyone will be there. In India, you have a bigger, broader range. You have much lower education, but you have also higher education.
Yeah.
So if you go for the top 5%, top 1%, in India, you get better than in Europe. But you have to go to this top 5%. The top 5% in India is smarter than the top 5% in the US or in Europe. But the average in India is much lower than the other.
Also, I think it comes down to like a large number of people. Large number of people who choose development.
That, and you have a big difference between the different educations, different boards, and so on, where in Europe, pretty much every university has the same level of education. Correct. There is not a very high one, a very complex one, and a very simple one.
The standardization is a lot higher.
Yes.
Understood. And do you see this as a long-term thing, to be in India?
No, unfortunately, we'll probably go back to Belgium in a few months.
Okay.
But I will surely come back because I'm sad to come back to Belgium.
And you're going back is that because the center of gravity?
The business is there. We do 2 or 3% of our turnover in India.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed to come to help go to the next phase. But now that it's done, for 2%, it's not justified that I stay here. I have to go with the team that grow. But now the Indian company is in a super growth speed up, but they are growing like close to 200% per year.
Mm-hmm.
So I just need to wait a few years and it's going to be important.
Come back. This is fascinating, right, Fabian? But what's been the hard part about entrepreneurship? Like you spoke about there being a cash crunch for
cash the last part.
And, figuring out product market fit in an open software model also is hard. But for you personally, I think you got married, your children are 10 and 12. So they've also kind of been born and grew up with your company. But talk about, being an entrepreneur in a space where it's taken a long time.
Yeah.
Today it's easy to say, okay, we do thousands of employees and hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue. But there must have been a time where this would not have been the case. So talk about what made you get up the next morning and continue to do it?
Yes. It's clear that when you see who do today, they succeed, it seems easier, they have a good product, so they win, blah, blah, blah. But I've had 7 years close to bankruptcy. 7 years. A few months, it's okay. You can live by that. But 7 years is a lot. Every day you come back, you stress at the end of the month to know if you will pay salaries. You have to fight to get cash very quickly. Sometimes very bad deal. Just because the client paid early on, you will take the deal, but you know the margins are wrong. And that kind of thing, it's very hard. That's the kind of things when you don't have cash, where you don't sleep a lot.
Okay.
Especially because I bootstrapped everything. I didn't start with big VCs or of capital. I started from nothing. But the thing is, these hard times is what made the success of the company today. If we are so efficient, so productive, it's because we were forced to survive when we were cash constrained.
And how were you able to hold on to people? I'm assuming a lot of the important people who were there at that time have built out this culture for you when you are now 4,000 people.
Yeah.
How did you hold on to people in a cash difficult situation?
So shit happens all the time. The thing is, as an entrepreneur, you are optimist. And when it happens, what you will say, okay, in 3 months, it's going to be better. So the worst thing to do is to say, okay, I will reduce cost by 10%, maybe fire a few people, just 10%, and it's going to be better. And then you wait 3 months, it's not better. And then you reduce 10%, it's not better, and then better. That's the worst thing to do. When shit happens, what you should do is to be transparent with the people. We have big problems, so I explained to everyone, here is the cash, and it gets close to zero.
Yeah.
And I showed and I explained. But then you need a plan. And I told them, here is what we'll do. I need you to stay with me. It's going to be hard. We'll do it. There might not be a raise of salary this year, but together we'll make it. And here is the plan. I did that. I have been very transparent. I had to fire because part of the plan was to reduce the cost of the company. And all these people, we went through this very hard time, they all stayed because they trusted me. So it's not about is it difficult or not. It's more about do they trust you? And if you deliver on your promise, if you are clear and transparent, they will follow you.
And what did you do? Like what was the plan to keep people when the company was... You can't give raise, so how do you...
For me, there was a series of plans. One is reduce cost. I had to do that, 30% less people. Another one was rather than selling monthly, we sell yearly. Sell more services, even though that's what we preferred because margin were low, we pushed back on services. And these three to get, and the switch of the business model, of course, when we went from full open source to open core.
Correct.
And this saved us 12 months after it gets better.
What, 7 years of near bankruptcy or, you know, being...
Yeah, but now we are super good because of that. I feel like the company is extremely efficient because we were forced to. We couldn't spend too much money. We couldn't spend on inefficient thing. We couldn't defocus ourselves. Everything else, when you don't have money, you have to choose your battle. You cannot do five things. You have to do one and succeed this one. And this forced us. The way we are today is because we lived through this very hard time.
Wow.
And you know, most of the directors, they may do the opposite. If things don't get bad, very bad, they try to hide them. They try to hide it. They try to say to everyone, "It's gonna be okay. We'll make it." And blah 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 blah. The thing is, if you do that, you will lose all your trust on you.
Okay.
Because the employee, they notice you are bad.
Yeah.
You can say whatever you have. If you have real difficulties, they will see it. They will notice it, and they will understand it.
Correct.
And then they will, because you don't explain clearly, they might
leave.
Leave or do their own plan, which is probably worse than what will actually happen. So even if it's hard, telling the truth, giving a plan, telling you need them, and most people will follow.
That's fascinating. How long has it been, Fabian, for you to be an entrepreneur? It's been what?
Let's say from when I graduated to now, it's been 25 years.
25 years,
yeah.
of building and kind. Do you ever get tired? Do you ever, someone of your talents and your intelligence, you know, to be in a difficult space for so long, do you ever think, you know, screw it, I don't want to do this anymore. I'll just go get a job and do something more fun. Like,
no, what I love about to do is that what we do is unlimited. I mean, we have apps for marketing, we have apps for sales, inventory, manufacturing, website builder. And in all these areas, you can push the boundaries. There are so much inefficiencies in all these apps that the scope is so large that you cannot get bored on that. And what I like is product and making companies more efficient, and there are still a lot of margins of improvement. So I'm not bored because of that. And
what plans for Odoo and for your company for the future? All your tools, all your people?
So we'll continue, obviously. If we want to think about the long term, okay. If you want to predict the future, you have to understand the past.
Okay.
So let's have a look at what happened in the IT in the past.
Now,
it started with operating system. You know, MS-DOS, Dr. DOS, okay. Unix, Minix, plenty of operating system. Fast forward today, there is only Microsoft, Linux, and iOS, Apple. Yeah. That was the technical part, operating system. And then came the complexity of end-user interface.
Okay.
You had the Office tools, Lotus 1-2-3, Works, WorldPerfect, plenty of Office tools. Fast forward today, there is only Microsoft Office and Google Docs, only two players.
That's it.
Management software, in addition to the technical complexity, in addition to the user complexity, you have the business complexity. It's difficult to make business become simple. We are at the level where Office or operating system were 15 years ago. Still lots of players, thousands of different software. But consolidation will happen like the rest of the industry. And we know, I know, that probably, I don't know if it's in 5 years, 10 years, or 15 years, but it's going to be the same. Two or three will remain, and we'll have the world market. It's going to be a commodity. Everyone will use the same software, and it's going to be only two or three players. So to answer your question, my plan for the future is to survive.
So be there for as long, and then you'll be
just
there.
Just survive.
And, And is capital a part of that? Do you like?
No.
Is the business now creating a lot of capital, more than you need, or?
Yes. No, we don't have the issue of cash as much as we need.
And is it profitable now?
It's profitable. It's cash flow profitable. So we get more cash than we can spend. We are recruiting as fast as we can, and it's even not enough.
Wow.
It has not always been like that. But you know what? It feels good to say that. But it comes with different difficulties.
Yeah.
When we were focused, when we had cash issues, it was our main focus. Everyone was aligned. We have to be efficient. We cannot spend too much. We have to be profitable. We have to make these deals to get the money and so on. Everybody was aligned. And that was, in a way, our source of motivation. We needed to survive. And at one point, I switched the business model. 1 year after, everything went super good. We started to have a lot of sales, lots of cash and everything. And then I've seen the motivation of the employees decrease. They didn't have this need to survive, to fight for getting the sale and that kind of thing. So we had to find our motivation elsewhere, in the product, in helping our clients. But it was less sexy than surviving.
Yeah. I think it's a good question, actually, because there are, you know, people say there are teams and there are leaders and there are CEOs who are wartime, and there are teams and leaders and CEOs who are peacetime.
Yes.
And both of them, like wartime, like you're saying, when you're struggling for survival and month to month, you're struggling for payroll, but you're really putting in your best work.
Mm-hmm.
Wartime CEOs and teams make a lot of difference. But in peacetime, I think protecting your core, making sure growth is stable, making sure you're investing in processes, systems, which make your company sustainable. Those are also equally important things. So I think they both teach you different things, but like where you seem to be someone who...
I'm a wartime one, yeah, for sure.
You get bored with inaction.
But I believe you always have to reinvent yourself, always have to change. So even though the business is working well, it doesn't mean we have to fine-tune everything. We need to innovate. And in order to innovate, you have to try new things. Some will fail, some will succeed. So for me, it's not about the environment. The environment can be good and the business profitable, whatever. You can still have a wartime mindset. Of course, you need some peacetime leaders, COO or others, because there is the day-to-day operations that you have to fine-tune. But you still need to continue innovating and transforming the company. And nothing lasts forever.
Yeah.
And so if you have not the mindset of moving ahead all the time, you will have a time where it's not going to work.
Building for 25 years, Fadia, tell me a little bit about what are the principles of entrepreneurship that have kind of remained stable for you over these 25 years, whether when you were a young service company to a much larger open source product company, and it's been 25 years, which is, I think it's like four cycles, right? So what are some of the principles of entrepreneurship that you have now kind of hard-coded that this is what will build out great businesses, or this is what you believe in, your beliefs around building great companies?
Yeah. One is product first. Today, even as a CEO of 4,000 people, I still spend 50% of my time on the product. The product is what makes the company grow, that pulls everything forward. If we sell so much, it's because sales are easy, and sales are easy because the product is super good. So product first. Research and development, innovate, focus on always improving. Another one is, strangely enough, when we are 5, 100 or 1,000, the culture of the company is basically the same. Didn't change. The values we had...
What are those? What are your values? Like, what are your core values?
Let's say the people ones. I believe in three things. Evolution of our people. Everyone needs to evolve in salary, but also in learning, responsibilities, and so on. Strong responsibilities to everyone, and autonomy, a lot of autonomy.
So evolution, autonomy, and
responsibility.
Responsibility. Okay.
I can explain with examples.
Yes, please do.
We have business analysts. They transform small and mid-sized company. You come with your process, and they will say, okay, we'll organize this, and it's complete transformation for the company. It's strategic project. When we recruit business analysts, they are project owner, transforming companies on their own. Obviously, they have coach, but they are not part of five teams. They are responsible of their client and they deploy from A to Z.
From day one?
From day one. Obviously, at the beginning, with a lot of coaching and training. And so on. But
individually responsible.
Yes.
Okay.
Autonomy, everyone can decide pretty much everything. And we even train people to that, because most of them are not autonomous. Yes. Especially when they get out of the university, they are not autonomous at all. Schools killed that. You know, sometimes we have people coming to the office. Can I buy this barcode scanner? I need for a demo. What do you think you decide? I mean, if it was your own personal finance, you could decide for €50 a budget. So, and a lot of, in companies, people feel like because they are in a company, they won't decide and kind of super easy decision.
That is so true.
So you have to train them. You have to tell them, don't ask me to decide. You just don't answer the question. You decide. You probably know the answer already. And evolution, it's investing a lot in the people. Training them, coaching them.
Mentorship,
moving them from one company to another. Because when you change country, you learn a lot. So after 2 years, they can go work anywhere with Odoo.
Yeah.
And that kind of things.
And how do you do that for yourself as a founder? Because it's good, like, you can create evolution, autonomy, and responsibility for people who work for you. But even as founders, sometimes a lonely journey. How do you ensure that, especially on the evolution part, that you are growing? Do you derive mentorship from people, your board, your investors, your other friends?
No, I learned on the job. I read a lot.
You were reading a book when
you were sitting in the room? Yeah, I came by flight, so
okay.
Spend time, but I read a lot. But apart from that, I learn much more from the job by just doing it, meeting clients, innovating in the product. I learn from doing the job. I don't have mentors. I never go to clubs or entrepreneur meeting. I never do any kind of this thing. I don't have time for that.
And do you think like that's a good way to increase skills? Like
for some people, yeah, everyone finds its inspiration different way. For me, I learn by walking. I just work with different teams and get feedback from clients, and I learn on the job.
And are people in your organization like you that way? Like, is Odoo a kind of company where people like this come in, like super independent, kind of self-motivated? Is that the kind of profile you kind of get in?
No, I think as a large company, we have lots of different profile, of course. But if I speak about the culture, maybe something interesting is that when you start, the culture is you. I mean, it's the way you behave. And people learn from just watching you. The way you behave, the way you decide, and when you are 5, 10, 20 people, it's you. Then you start growing. And when you get to 150 people, you have middle managers, team leaders. And then the culture is not you anymore, it's them.
Correct.
So your job changes. Your job is not about doing the culture, your job is about teaching the culture to these guys.
Correct.
And as you grow even more, when you start to have 1,000 people, it's not about, you cannot manage every team leader or every, it's all about communication. It's to communicate a lot and things like that. So I write a lot of books, I communicate a lot to the people, I do Ask Me Anything sessions with a lot of teams. I wrote a book about the culture, about the implementation methodology, how we deliver the service. So as you grow, chief executive officer become chief explanatory officer, and you have to explain a lot.
Wow. No, people actually underestimate the value of over communication, because we sometimes believe, like, that's what, you know, the saying goes, right? The biggest issue with communication is the illusion that it has happened.
Mm.
You assume that the person you're talking to has understood, or you assume that it's natural or obvious, but it's not the case. You have to constantly keep communicating, keep making sure that people around are.
Yeah. Especially if you build a culture of autonomy. Autonomy works if everyone is aligned. I mean, if you have to decide between A and B, and you let your people decide between A and B, they should know exactly what is the direction of the company. Could be A, could be B, but they have to be aligned on what's important for the company, what are our focus, what's not our focus. And for that, it requires a lot of communication.
Amazing. That's amazing. And going forward, like, I think, how do you think about like legacy building, or like at your scale, like this is now surviving to become the, you know, to be the winner take all, right? And you're well on your way there. I think you've found a great place in the world of business, right, for yourself. But what does it mean to build this out to survive, build out something, like for OpenERP to be someone like Microsoft Office or to be of that
penetration? One key challenge for me was to say, okay, 50 people, you are super efficient. How do you stay that efficient with 4,000 people and after for 10,000 or 20,000 people? And one thing we do well is that we refactor the company continuously.
Okay.
For me, companies are like software. You have to refactor it. Because
say more. What does that mean?
Complexity always creep in. You let people do. There is always a manager who wants to launch a new initiative, create a new product, or says we do an exception because he wants to meet his quota. And all those things create complexity because you have to deal with it after in the company. And you have to refactor and kill a lot of things and simplify all the time to be sure the company stays super simple.
And that's so hard, right?
Yeah, because everyone wants to add something, wants to add complexity, build new things. Nobody wants to remove something, wants to simplify your process, wants to... And if you build a culture, that's something we succeeded at Odoo, is to build a culture of being ultra simple and refactor continuously to be sure we remain simple.
And how do you tackle it when you start seeing complexity come in? Like, do you immediately remove it?
First, there is a culture of decision. So we let people decide a lot, but we have to train them. And most of the time, the right decision is to say no. When someone wants to add something which is a defocus, which is an extra exception, which is if you want to remain simple, you try to avoid exceptions. So that first needs to be ready to refuse a lot of things. It also allows you to go faster. If you do less, you can drive faster. And then you have a comp of not accepting something inefficient and continuously refactor and improve to be sure it's perfect.
Amazing. And your family, like your father was an antique dealer, or your wife, your children, what do they think about the size of the business and the kind of thing that you have created? I'm sure they must be proud, but did they ever like they've just supported you throughout? Did they ever think that this could be this big?
Even myself, I didn't know. When I was a student, I said my goal in life would be to have three kids and three employees. I have only two kids in the world.
And would your kids be your employee?
Then it changed. When I was 22 or 23, I don't know, I said I want 100 employees before 30, and I failed. And then I said I want 1,000 employees before 40, and I failed. No, my next goal is 10,000 before 50.
You're on your way there.
I always fail by a few months. So it's a failure, but not a big one.
Not really a failure. Okay, understood. But where do you derive happiness and satisfaction from?
What I like is to build things. I like to have an impact. I like to see our clients be way more efficient because they use Odoo. To transform companies where people say, wow, no, my job is much better. That's really where I get my motivation, satisfaction.
The kick, yeah.
And I like to build things. I like to work on the product, make it better so that we can improve their life. If I go on holidays, I get bored. I need to continuously build value.
Have you been like this since the beginning?
Yeah, always. Yeah, most of the time, my wife goes on holiday without me.
Really?
Yeah, I get bored on the beach or on the, because I mean, for me, it's way more fun to have an impact, to transform companies, to improve a product, to continuously think about challenges. That is fun. To build something, it's great. It's intellectually interesting, and that's where I find my pleasure.
I mean, do you follow the entrepreneurial ecosystem in India now that you've been here for a while?
Not so much.
But you believe in the market of India growing and
a lot. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. What have you seen that has surprised you about the country?
Mindset of entrepreneur.
Yeah.
The
fast growing and so on.
Fast growing. The fact that companies grow much faster than what we used to see. Everything's feasible. I mean, in India, you have a market for everything. You sell something super cheap, you have a market for that. You sell something at average price, you have a market for that. You have something high luxury, you have a market for that. You have basically a market for everything and for everybody.
Correct.
So it's really a land of whatever the idea, you get something.
Correct.
You can develop on that.
Correct.
Yes. No, lots of good things.
And culturally, you feel it's similar to like...
Our culture is autonomy, responsibility and evolution.
Evolution, correct.
I do believe that it's universal. Everyone in the world, they want to be autonomous. They want to evolve. Everybody, even the ones you feel they don't, they, at their own scale, but they want to evolve.
Okay.
And they want responsibilities. Obviously, in India, people are less used to an autonomy. Hierarchies are very strong. They respect it. They don't say no. They don't criticize. They don't. If they disagree, they won't tell it. But still, they are in need for that.
Correct.
So our culture of saying, okay, we want people to be more autonomous. When we say that in Belgium, it's there. In India, it's here. But they are used to that.
Yeah.
So it's still very important.
Much higher.
Yeah. So it's a universal value, but the level they expect and get is different from one country to another.
What keeps you up at night today?
The same product. Finding good features that will allow an accountant to be 10% faster, or a recruiter to recruit more or easier, or someone with an entrepreneur that have no design experience to design his own website in a few seconds. These are the kind of things that I continuously think about, is how can I make the product so that their life is going to be better?
So I think it's fascinating to me how, like you even said, 50% of your time is spent on product despite having 4,000 employees in 15 countries and running a $500 million business. That's actually very fascinating. Do you directly still work on features and code
yes.
them in and so on?
So I'm a developer. I don't have time to develop myself. I only do it on the weekend. But I'm involved with a lot of specification, testing, even testing the competitors, the other products, solving the issues of our customers, and that kind of thing.
And that's what keeps you up at night?
Yes. I really love that. So the way I work is that I only work for the long term, mostly. So my role as a CEO is to guarantee that the company will have more than 50% growth in 3 years. That's my role. This year it's guaranteed. Next year is pretty much guaranteed. My role of CEO is in 3-5 years, we need to keep 50% growth minimum. So I'm mostly involved in a long-term project. Product obviously is one, because that's what drives growth for us. But I'll spend a lot of time also on internal efficiency. New department to be very efficient, solving when there is a bottleneck. That's why also I came to India, is that the company didn't grow a lot. So I changed that. What I don't do is the day-to-day. I won't sell, I won't do service, or if I do service, it's just because I want to improve our methodologies.
Correct.
To be sure that we go one step further or more efficient.
Understanding the concept.
Not to serve one client. I don't sell, I only do the transition so that the company gets better.
If you were to start a company, Fabian, today, and it was not Odoo, what space would you choose, given your skill set?
I would do Odoo. There is nothing better I can do in life.
That's what they say, right? Any decision or decision is about passion, opportunity, and skill set, right? And do you think for you, other than Odoo, these three things would match?
Yeah, I'm passionate about entrepreneur and business and so on, about software development and making people's life better. These three are reaching the mark. And, you know, most people spend like 1/3 or half of their life at work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of time. So if you can make them a little bit more productive, less recording of the manual recording of data, more access to information.
Yeah.
The impact you have on these people is 50% of their time is huge. Because a lot of people are suffering from not being effective, of doing administrative job, boring repetitive tasks, or not having access to the data. We always think about helping people in their life, but 1/3 of your life is at work.
Yeah.
So if we can have a leverage on that, and I have one with Odoo, I feel it's very important.
That's amazing.
I can give you an example. Any job position, people are used to it, so they don't notice the inefficiency, but pretty much every job position is super inefficient. Take a recruiter, human resource, they recruit people.
Correct.
If you have a recruiter, sit next to him or her and check how he works.
Okay.
You will see that 50% of their emails is about scheduling meeting. Are you available for first round of interview, second round, manager is not available, we have to switch, candidate not available. 50% of the email is scheduling meeting. Can you imagine 50% of your time doing administrative tasks of scheduling meeting? I mean, it's not great. Everyone wants to contribute. Everyone wants to be efficient in a company.
Okay.
If they don't have the tools, they will just suffer because of the inefficiencies.
Correct.
And these are the kind of things when you have good tools, like Odoo, scheduling meeting, you send an email, candidate see directly the availabilities of the different manager, can reschedule himself, manager can reschedule. It should be automated. HR should work on conversation, driving value, explaining the company, not on scheduling meetings. And for every position, it's the same. Take an accountant, 50% of his time is recording bills in a system.
Correct.
He has paper bill, recording a system, and he writes the code.
Correct.
Totally uninteresting. It's better to do tax optimization, reporting, analysis of the data, but that's not what they do.
Correct.
So providing tools that make these people work less administrative, less busy, so that they can focus on more value-added tasks is a game changer for me in their life.
And you do this for everyone in the company, basically?
Yes. We have apps for every department. Because we're open source, we have a community apps also that you can install. In total, it's 50,000 applications. So basically, any issue in the company, we have an app for that. Pretty much any.
When you started, did you think it would become what it has become today? Like, did you imagine it to be this big?
No, but I don't think about the... I don't do plan for the future.
As an entrepreneur, that's...
Yeah. So, you know, you want to do
something. You don't talk about vision.
You don't put numbers on it. I'm not a number guy.
Okay. You're a product guy.
I'm product guy, value guy. Uh-huh. I'm thinking about the value, and I know if the value is big, the rest will follow.
Correct.
But I'm not focusing on the numbers.
Amazing. Amazing. Is Odoo what you want to do till you retire or till you kind of, yeah, till you're on this?
I think I will be bored one day. I mean, there is so much to do, so much inefficiency at work, so much people who suffer from not having tools that there is always room to improve on.
Amazing. I think this has been you're such a sharp conversationalist. Like your everything that you've said has been so sharp and on point. I find it fascinating how focused you are I think so. We have almost a million people watching this, right? And India is in a stage where we are becoming a lot more. India has been a service, like India has been like Odoo in a way, right?
Mm.
We've been a service country for the longest time, agriculture and services, right? We are now becoming more manufacturing, more productized, more entrepreneurial. Younger people are becoming more entrepreneurial. Risk appetite is becoming a lot higher. Like you said, the middle class incomes have gone up. So people are able to take these calls much earlier in life. So people who are watching us and who are watching you, I think it's fascinating how much clarity of thought you have in what you're building. It's genuinely fascinating. And, you know, our core focus has been on, you know, like if there's anyone who is watching and they're wondering whether to start their own business and how difficult it is going to be, I think listening to people like you on being resilient and focused and being super clear about what you're doing with the outcome being a byproduct, not the outcome being a goal on day one, I think is inspiring. But if you would like, you know, kind of before we end, if you were to kind of talk about one piece of advice for people who are watching, and they are much younger people, they're probably 22, 23, 24.
Who wants to become entrepreneur.
May want, thinking about it, wants to do something, but is very ambitious. Even if it's in a job, or even if it's in their parents' business, or even if it's in their own business as an entrepreneur, or, doing something meaningful.
Yeah.
What advice would you give them from your own experience?
Just do it. If you have an idea, just do it. Don't wait for an idea. If you think about something, just do it. Because a lot is about the journey, not what you achieve. And you can only start the journey when you start doing stuff. And a lot of people are waiting for the right idea, the right business model. And actually, I got my business model after 15 years. So it's just... And I do believe a lot about execution. The strongest skill you can have is execution. It's not about business model ideas or whatever. It's just about learn to make things, well, things happen. So, yeah, the best advice is just start and do it.
Yeah, in your case, I think 15 years is a long time. We spoke about, you know, kind of being in a place where you had to be, was difficult, you had to let people go. Do you think that kind of resilience is something that can be learned, or it's something you're born with? Or you just have to prepare yourself if it's like...
Yeah, when you are forced to, you learn it. You have no other option.
People would have given up in your position, right? A lot of people may have given up and said it's not worth it.
But I think that every company will suffer at one point or several times. The difference between a successful company and a not successful, it just survived during the difficult times. Because it's normal to have ups and downs. If you don't have ups and downs, you are not growing as fast as you could. You could do. It's just normal. You have ups and downs. The difference is the ones who survive during the downs.
Yeah.
For that, you need resilience.
Resilience. Don't give up at all.
Yeah.
Amazing. Fabian, this has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for your time. I think all the best whenever you come to Gurgaon, you can absolutely, we would love to host you. You can use this office. Would love to kind of, share more about Bombay Shaving Company and what we do as well. And I think we should definitely talk about how Udo can help us. But thank you for your time. And, you know, just amazing to see how, I don't know whether when you were sitting in our reception, we have our main value is feet on the ground and eyes on the stars.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, for our company, we want to make sure that we never dilute our ambitions, but at the same time, we stay humble and curious and, you know, down to earth. And seeing the kind of person you are, like, you know, you are just so, for someone as successful as you, you're so normal and no airs and honest. And it's amazing, actually. Like,
everyone is just human, you know.
No, I know, but anyone in your situation would have actually, you know, come in with a large team, worn, you know, super fancy suits and, you know, all of that. But you seem like a really down-to-earth guy who's achieved such amazing things. So I think for me to just sit across you and learn, and even for all of us, has been amazing. And I think you're the right example for anyone who wants to be an entrepreneur. I think it's amazing how you do that.
Good. Continue. It's good.
genuinely. It's
a quick question from my side. For the benefit of the viewers, can you please explain open source software?
Yes.
Yes.
Especially with open AI now, like being like everyone's top source thing, yeah.
True. It used to be a trend. No, it's more about AI, but yeah, an open source software is, you know, usually as opposed to proprietary software. Proprietary software is a software that you buy with a license. And usually the license are there to constrain the user. Maximum that number of user, you can use only this feature.
Only for this much time and so on, yeah.
Open source is a software that has a license that do the exact opposite. It guarantees the user that the software will always be free, that he can distribute it for free, use it for free, and even get access to the source code so that he can adapt it and modify if he wants to. So it's a totally different approach where the mindset is knowledge should be free, knowledge should be shared, and software is knowledge. And that's something I'm really passionate about and I really like, is that I really think these kind of things should be accessible to everyone.
It's the whole concept of never charging a library, never charging a fee. Mm. You cannot charge someone to read a book. You should not, because knowledge is free. So the whole idea of open source is software is free, plus you can do whatever you want on it. So if you have a developing team, they can change. So for example, if Udo is working with us, we can change it with them on specific requirement for us as well.
And with open source come an open mindset.
Yeah.
Obviously, when you are with an open source product, the company is different too. The company is more open. The company works with communities. It's not only R&D. So we have a lot of people contributing to the software.
Yeah.
And rather than just your own R&D. It's also more open in terms of transparency, explaining everything. So for instance, at Odoo, we disclose all our numbers, all statistics, everything, because we have an open mindset.
And it's so, that is so. So open source actually just creates an open economy and an open culture.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. And it's a source of a lot of valuable stuff. Like
you see,
internet, Android, your phone.
Yeah,
lots of those things are open source.
Did you see that transferring into like very honest conversation between your employees and like a culture of transparency, even at the lower levels with your clients? You're always honest with them.
Yeah.
Like the fact that you guys work on open source all the time, do you see that reflecting in the way even your service teams, your sales teams?
A lot of our clients actually consider us as partners, not as suppliers. That's why we call Reaper, because we work together, we develop together on the same software, on the same platform. They review what we do, we review what they do. So we really collaborate on pretty much everything, at the technical level. On the sales level and marketing level, it's nothing about open source, because open source is a great development model to work together and build the software, but it's not a business model. It doesn't help to get revenue.
Yeah. It's anti-revenue in a way, right?
Exactly. So you need both. You also need a business model in addition to the development model.
You know, found a way to merge it with that 80-20 freemium model, like you said. Awesome. Awesome. Damian, this is awesome. We do have a gift for you.
Yeah.
We do, right?
No.
we absolutely must, for your time, for your effort, and for everything that you stand for, honestly.
Yeah.
It's not something big. It's just... Are you flying out today?
Yes. Wow.
Yes, but here you go. It's a full-fledged hamper.
Do you have a bag? Because I am flying.
What we will do is we'll get courier to your office.
Oh, wow.